It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say Worldwide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we'll get to the overreaction of playoff percentages, chances of making the playoffs wildly swinging after week one in a second. Text message. It's on the heels of Seth and I going back and forth on this new NBA rule where they no longer count end of quarter, end of half, end of game heaves on players' three-point shooting percentages. I usually roll my eyes at how hypercritical of the NBA Sean is, but he's 100% right here. NBA players are so pampered and coddled, this change is dumb. I'm not here to argue the change. I'm here to argue, am I hypercritical of the NBA, Seth?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. It's never struck me one way or the other. I think to go back to the baseball analogy or something, I feel like there's a little bit of, I've always appreciated that baseball kind of tries to take things, into perspective when it adjusts even the traditional stats. So like a sacrifice fly and everything, like it's, I'd like that you get credit for a sacrifice
or
it doesn't hurt you. Yeah. Like I feel like it's a little bit in the spirit of that. Yeah. I think if you separate it from, let's pretend it was your own son who's a really good player, but he might take like 100 three-point attempts in a season.
Oh, yeah.
But he's always the kid that's doing the right thing. Yeah. And at the end of every quarter, he's going to heave the ball up. It hurts his percentages and everything. And meanwhile, the selfish players that don't do it and won't heave because they don't want it to hurt their stats are gaining an advantage because of that. So I kind of look at it as like almost like a sacrifice fly.
Right.
Now, it is a team stat. The shot's considered a team stat. So I'm guessing because I looked at like three different articles that didn't address whether you get credit for it or not. But I'm guessing you don't get credit for it if it goes in. But it's kind of like in baseball. You just kind of remove some of the samples from the sample size.
I would tell my son, I'd sit him down in the car and I'd say, son, these things tend to work out and balance out in life in the end. He's probably going to get food poisoning tonight or something like that.
Yeah, never tell your kids that.
He's going to get a speeding ticket when he turns 16.
Life doesn't balance out. If there's one thing you need to learn, it's that life does not balance out.
Lots
of times selfish cheaters end up continuing to succeed
over
and over and over again.
Yeah.
But don't be penalized at least for doing the right thing. Try to do the right thing. Don't become one of these selfish bastards. But if you can even the tables a little bit so that the selfless players aren't penalized for doing the right thing, I like it.
Should have hired you to drive my kids home from soccer back in the day. That's what it sounds like. You could have given them a good talking to.
One of my favorite stories, Mark Twain wrote a short story basically about this real son of a SOB, who's just a bad person. And you know what? Guess what? You got no comeuppance in life. You got to just hope that the afterlife takes care of it. If you're looking for things to balance out in this life, I encourage you to go back to your religious doctrine of choice, okay?
There you go. There you go. Still trying to get my hypercritical of the NBA. I got to sit and think about that for a while.
If anything, I think at times, maybe you speak frankly about where the NBA sits in kind of the hierarchy of
maybe
sports or whatever.
I mean, I like
dismissive.
The NBA.
Are you dismissive about the NBA?
I don't know. No, I like the NBA is one of those things that I like more than we talk about it on this show. Like I watch every Rockets game. I watch the NBA on Thursday nights. I watch Inside the NBA because it's entertaining to me, that kind of thing. I am an NBA fan. That's why sometimes you have to be a fan of something to be hypercritical of it because I don't like the direction the product went, maybe. Yeah. I don't like all the load management and everything that goes on in the NBA.
I'll tell you another thing about why I like this rule, honestly, is, and I really feel like a lot of the people who are most angry about it, if they reframe it in their minds a little bit, should actually be happy about this because it does... It's encouraging selflessness or it's recognizing selflessness as opposed to selfishness. I know that as a defensive lineman, like there were so many times in my career where I would just consciously tell myself, if I would just be more selfish, I would get more accolades.
Yeah.
Like it's, financially or with awards or anything else like that, like selfishness, the things the coaches are telling you they really, really want are not actually rewarded. Like the selfish play gets rewards. The guys that don't play according to the scheme, but that make a lot of plays, coaches kind of grit their teeth and say like, oh, well, we got to pay him $30 million a year. So it's like, whenever there's a kind of an evening of the score a little bit to where you actually are trying to make the rules aligned a little bit more with what you claim you want.
Yeah.
I like that.
So you could have had more TFLs if you had freelanced a little bit more. And
Yeah. Like, and I always there's kind of a balance you have to find, because there is a little bit of risk reward there where, you know, you're always trying to, and different coaches are different. Some guys just want everything done right all the time.
Yeah.
Other guys understand they're like, okay, we got to, you want to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs, and there's going to be some mayhem here. But
if I had to guess, the coach that you came into the league under was one of those guys that wanted you doing what your job was all the time.
Yeah. Oh, no, God. Oh, God. Sorry, I'm getting stressed now.
No improv going on there. All right, let's talk about something less stressful. The Athletic ran their Austin Mock, who is sort of he's their computer nerd, for lack of a better label for him. He's the guy that runs the season simulations before the year and spits out the win totals, all that stuff. Well, the biggest playoff risers and fallers after week one. Talk about overreaction. Biggest riser in playoff odds, the Las Vegas Raiders, who are on the schedule for the Texans in week 16, I believe. They beat the Patriots. Their chances of going to the playoffs nearly doubled. They went from 21% to 40%. The biggest hit to playoff odds is a really interesting one to me. We'll get to where the Texans are in a second, but I just want to hit the extremes here. So the biggest one went up 19% from 21 to 40. The biggest drop were the Lions, who went from 73 all the way down to 47%. They got blown out by the Packers. And it was funny, Seth, yesterday when First Take was on in the studio here, one of the questions they had going across the bottom of the screen was, This is after the Vikings beat the Bears on Monday Night Football. Are the Vikings a threat to the Packers in the NFC North? And I'm like, huh. I mean, the Lions did win 15 games last year and win that division. By the way, with a skeleton crew on defense, they lost all kinds of guys on defense to injury last year. I'm like, man, that is a week one overreaction right there, that the Lions aren't even part of the graphic up there.
Yeah, they know what they're doing, though. That's exactly why that graphic was what it was. It got your attention. But at the same time, I think that when it comes to overreacting to week one, I think with the Lions, it fell right in place with what people were talking about in the offseason, which is, wow, you lose a really good offensive coordinator and a really good defensive coordinator. You've got a head coach who's not really an X's and O's expert on either side of the ball. He's never been a coordinator. How are you going to rebound from this? And it played out exactly how people would have feared. So yep. I get it. I'm not going to sit here and say the Lions are doomed or anything. We've done that with Dan Campbell before. So, but it's that one at least makes sense.
It's Boomer and Geo. Mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap. And I really feel like, you know, since, Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chiefs had the second biggest drop from 83% down to 61%, so they're still a better than even odds chance to make it's probably the lowest playoff odds the Chiefs have had since they started winning Super Bowls.
I think the biggest thing with the Chiefs too is that, you know, they're going to have to rely on their defense to do it, just like they did last year. I don't think the improvements they made on offense, right. And if you drafting Josh Simmons, you could call an improvement at left tackle if he works out. But now you're down yet another wide receiver for at least
six games.
And you look at it on paper, and no matter how much you can say, well, the Chiefs just figure out a way to get it done. A lot of what they did in that game looked a lot like what they did in the Super Bowl last year. And it's hard to visualize them ever getting back to being the incredible force that they used to be.
I agree with that. Rashee Rice is who we're talking about with the 6-game suspension, obviously. Now, they were without him most of last season, including in the Super Bowl. Like, that'll be a big key for them. Like, when he's on the field, he's an impact player for them. You know, so what he is when he gets back from a suspension, I think, is going to be a big deal for the Chiefs. So they were the second biggest dropper in playoff percentages. I'll count up to the Texans here. The Dolphins were next. Their odds dropped all the way to 14%, down from 32%. Falcons saw a big drop. Patriots saw a big drop. Seahawks, and then the Texans. Texans had, according to this model, a 53% chance of making the postseason before the season started, which, again, feels low to me, but maybe I'm too close to the situation. They're down to 40%. So that's a 13% drop, Seth. Do you feel like the Texans are less than a coin flip chance of making the postseason right now? That's what they are here. They're a 40% chance of making the postseason.
I would say, because usually they're always lower than how you actually feel. No, I would revise that upwards just because I think the defense is for real. I think both the Jags and the Colts did some good things in that game, but it was both against teams that are likely going to be bad football teams. The Panthers and the Dolphins were the two opponents.
Yeah.
And I think the Jags and the Colts could very well be much better teams this year. I mean, the Titans, for what it's worth, did make Bo Nix look like a bad quarterback. Like, so there's that. But I don't – they've got a lot of stuff to figure out offensively. I think that what did they start off the season at?
Who's
the Texans playoff? The Texans.
53%.
Yeah, I would still put them at 53% or so.
You would keep them the same. The Rams loss only affects it for me because it's a loss. You know, because it mathematically it's better to win than lose. But in terms of how I feel about the quality of the team, I still think they've got a chance to be a very good team this year.
But by the way, with the Chiefs, I was talking about Xavier Worthy just because I didn't know. So when you said Rashee Rice, I was like, oh, did I miss some news on Xavier Worthy? But he's still, I believe, expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, I was thinking of Rashee Rice because I know he's coming back. But you're right. Now, boy, in the short term, that's a real hit. Is Xavier Worthy and Rashee Rice both out? No question. Yeah, good call. On the flip side in the division, Indianapolis Colts, they were 28% coming into the season. That win over the Dolphins bumped them up to 38%. And the Jags went from 35% to 50%. The Jags have, according to this model, the Jags are now the chalk in the AFC South. They've got a 50% chance of making the playoffs. The Texans have a 40% chance. This gets me very amped for Week 3. I don't want to get out over my skis and skip over this Bucs game on Monday. But the Jags in Jacksonville loom in Week 3. And I don't know who the Jags have this weekend, but it would be real fun to go in there with the Jags 2-0. Like I think they were in D'Amico's rookie year as a head coach. Yeah. They went into Jacksonville in Week 3. That was D'Amico's first win as Texans coach, was Week 3 in Jacksonville, 0-2. That was kind of Tank Dell's coming out party, too. He had that big catch downfield and the big catch to seal the game in that one.
With the big fullback kickoff return for a touchdown.
Yeah, Beck. Beck.
What people always want to know about the Jaguars is what did Travis Hunter do? Travis Hunter played 39 offensive plays.
Okay.
He lined in the slot on 59% of those.
Okay.
Caught 6 of his 8 targets for, brace yourselves, everybody, 33 yards.
Oh, my God.
That's
going to transform the game.
That is. Nothing transforms a game like 5 yards per reception from the guy that you traded a boatload up to get because he's going to redefine football. Mm-hmm. Didn't play a whole lot in defense. He played 6 snaps. Targeted one time, allowing 12 yards on a reception to Tet McMillan.
Okay. Yeah. The word on the street is that he's going to play more cornerback. I mean, it's hard to play less cornerback than he did in that game, played 6 snaps. But I had read some stuff this week that they intend on working him more defensively. They're going to need to. If they feel like he's a high-level corner, they've got T. Higgins and Jamar Chase this weekend in Cincinnati.
I'll tell you what, I hope he's a good corner because 5 yards per reception ain't getting it done over there on the generational talent side of things, okay?
No, no. Yeah, these percentages are a bit whack, man.
5 yards in a pass reception.
We might need to play the Magnificent Gladstone in that rant that he had about how amazing Travis Hunter's going to be.
I sent you a picture of Les Snead standing next. Les Snead, the GM of the Rams, standing next to Gladstone, the magnificent Gladstone, the GM of the Jaguars.
Yeah,
and it is amazing how little he looks like any kind of person that would be working in a football organization.
Yes,
in any level.
Yes.
Of the organization, including in the analytics department.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like him. I do not like him at all.
Yeah.
There's something about him
yep.
that really, really rubs me the wrong way.
It was a great picture. I replied to Seth. I'm like, that's an NFL GM right there.
That's the GM of the team that currently has better odds of making
that's
the playoffs
the guy.
Than the Texans.
That's
yeah.
the guy. Time to step it up, Texans. Let's go. Oh, man. By the way, the team the Texans play this weekend or Monday, the Buccaneers, they're among the high risers in this Austin mock exercise. 73% coming into the season, 85% now chances of making the postseason. The Tampa Bay Bucs, I think a lot of that has to do with they're in a division with three really bad teams. Like, say what you will about the AFC South, at least you can kind of squint and turn the Jags into a playoff team. You can kind of squint and turn the Colts into a playoff team. The Titans have the number one overall pick in the draft, so there's some optimism surrounding them. That NFC South, boy, wow. The Panthers are still trash. The New Orleans Saints are going to be picking first in the draft this year. I'm very confident in that with Spencer Rattler as their starting quarterback. And the Atlanta Falcons are not good. They're not good. You know, so the Bucs, the NFC South, say what you will about the AFC South, the NFC South, really bad. Southern football in general.
This is a death battle starting this week on Monday night.
And it's it,
the
man.
AFC South versus the NFC South.
That's it, man.
Who takes it all? The biggest thing about the Bucs really is, okay, Emeka Buka had a very good and promising opening game. Baker Mayfield looked really good. They don't really have a great rushing attack, but the Buka in the slot versus Jalen Petrie or whomever the Texans choose to put there in the slot. Like, however the Texans kind of don't let Ibuka do what Puka Nacua did in the slot last
year.
Defense did great except for a few specific things, and the Bucks present that same challenge.
The thing to watch, one of the things to look for today, Seth, with the Texans is when the injury report comes out, is Derek Stingley Jr. on the injury report? Is he limited in practice? Is the hip a big deal? Because he was not moving great after that injury in that game against the Rams. I don't think it's a coincidence that Devontae Adams had some nice chain moving catches, including that back shoulder one where Stingley just kind of fell down. He looked a little hindered in that game, I thought, after that play. I mean, it was a bad looking injury. I gave him a lot of credit for getting back on the field and getting in there. Like, Stingley's a dog. Like, he got back in there, but this, you know, again, this is another challenge. You just laid it out. Like, this, they've got weapons in Tampa Bay, and you need Derek Stingley as close to 100% as possible in this game.
One of those routes, one of those plays where Stingley was trying to track Devontae Adams across the field, that's where that just wasn't him.
Right.
You know, you could tell that it was affecting him. Whether you saw the way he was moving after the play or not, but he's just not moving. He wasn't moving in that game the way that Derek Stingley moves. So it was obviously affecting him. Is he on the injury report? The other big thing in terms of the Texans matchup versus the Bucs is Vita Vea, the defensive tackle, versus a position group that's still very, very much a big question mark right now, and a team in the Texans that wants to run the ball and they want to be able to run it up the middle.
Yeah,
Vita Vea poses some challenges.
Yeah, and to that end, we'll be looking to see if Ed Ingram, where he is on this injury list that comes out later on today as well, because it was his absence that caused all the shuffling on the offensive line and whatnot. What do they feel like their best five is going into this game? Yeah, especially with Vita Vea on the other side. If I had to predict, I would predict Derek Stingley. This is just a guess. I'm just planting my flag in a prediction here. I would guess Stingley limited with a hip today in practice.
Yeah.
That would be my prediction. And my hope is that Kirk and Berrios are limited with hamstrings, because that would be progress from last week when they didn't practice at all.
What do we say about Baker Mayfield when he runs the ball? Because I know the tempting thing is always to say, oh, that white guy is deceptively fast. But he's not even deceptively fast. He's just resourceful as a runner.
I think that's a good word.
When I watch Baker Mayfield run, he reminds me of, like, you know, when I grew up playing high school football. It's nothing like these Texas high school football conferences. But there'd be a guy like Baker Mayfield that he would rush for 250 yards a game as a running back.
That was
and you're like, that guy's definitely going to make the NFL. And then he gets to college, and you're like, oh, he's actually kind of slow. And yet, I feel like Baker Mayfield would have been an all-state running back in my high school conference.
Oh, yeah.
He never looks fast. I don't think he's deceptively fast. He's just got a savvy way of running that he hurts you with his legs, and it's frustrating.
The guy in our conference, because I grew up in a part of the country, like football-wise, it was probably similar to yours, you know, in terms of like, Connecticut was not a football factory by any means. Yeah. To Bucky Jones, remember he played defensive back for the Patriots. That dude ran for like 250 yards every week for New Britain High School in New Britain, home of George Springer, by the way, New Britain, Connecticut. To Bucky Jones, and I'm like, this guy, he went to Syracuse. I'm like, this guy is going to break every Big East record for run. And he ended up making it to the NFL, but he didn't make it as a running back. He was a safety in the NFL. Like, what the hell's going on here?
Yeah, we had, same thing. Our rival high school, Canandaigua, which is where Ryan Poles, your buddy, went. they had a running back that was just incredible. Like, the best running back that ever lived, and I think he was ended up being a fullback at Michigan State.
Which of you, just if you detach yourself, like, it's pretty damn good,
right? Fullback at Michigan State.
But you thought he was going to win a Heisman when he was going off there, probably.
It's Boomer and Geo mornings on the Fan, 101.9 FM.
I want players who want to play. I don't want players who are oft injured. I want players who give a crap, and I really feel like, you know, since Thibodeau got here and Leon Rose got here, and I guess you could say World Wide West, that they've tried to bring in players who kind of mirrored that kind of thinking.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Hey, speaking of Tampa, the only time D'Amico Ryans has faced the Buccaneers as a head coach was back in 2023. They're facing him again here just 2 years later because this is the... this is the 17th game, if you will. This is the extra game that the Texans are playing in 2025. The 2023 game is one that they still replay on the NFL Network every now and then. It was one of the best games of the year and probably the most exciting game. It was, A, probably the most exciting game of the D'Amico Ryans era, and B, this was the game that put C.J. Stroud on the map back in 2023. Threw for 470 yards. 5 touchdowns, come back at the end of the game. Here was D'Amico Ryans a couple of days ago talking about what he remembered from that win over Tampa in 2023.
That 2023 game was an outstanding game, probably one of the most memorable games of my head coaching career. It was just unbelievable to have such back and forth play, right? The way Baker played in that game, made some big time plays down the stretch there. They were able to score on us in the red zone and we get the ball back. Luckily they scored. We let them score quick enough so we can have a little time left for CJ and the offense to drive down the field. And you know, just remember that drive. It's such a memorable drive. He hits a couple passes short, then we hit Tank on the big 7 route towards their sideline, and then come back the next play, and then we hit Tank, you know, in the end zone. I mean, what a memorable play. One that always that one always resonates in my mind. Just when you see rookies who made the plays that they were able to make at that time, you knew we had something special in those guys.
That was a huge win. What I remember from that, I remember the Dare field goal for sure. Well, we've got the audio of this stuff. We'll play some of it here in a second. But that was that was week 9. So the Texans had their bye week 2 weeks before that and came back and from their bye week and played the Carolina Panthers and lost. They lost to the Carolina Panthers, who would go on to have the first pick in the draft that year. Well, the Bears would have the first pick because they had Carolina's pick. Carolina would go on to be the worst team in football that year, and the Texans lost to them coming off of a bye week. Like, you had an extra week to prepare for that. The Frank Reich had yet to be fired, and you lost to that team. You're 3-4. You come back home, and the Buccaneers score a late touchdown to Cade Otton to take a lead. And I remember sitting in the press box like, God, they're going to be 3-5 And this defense that's so vaunted just made Baker Mayfield look like an MVP. And then CJ marches him down the field in 46 seconds. And it flips the narrative on everything, on the season, on CJ himself. It was crazy.
That's where I keep thinking about last week's game. And they were the Texans were in the middle of a really impressive drive at the end of the game. And if it weren't for Dare Gumbawale fumble, who knows exactly what it would have happened.
And you what would been, we be saying?
We would be saying a lot of really positive things about how, wow, it took four quarters for it to click, yep. But you finally saw it on that four. And it did. It did click on that final drive. Now, you know, the Rams knew that the Texans needed a touchdown, so that changes the level of difficulty is a little bit different. But they spread it out. Yeah. CJ was cooking, et cetera, et cetera. He withstood a Damian Pierce dropped ball, dropped pass on that drive and still was moving down the field. But a Gumbawale fumbles the ball, which is a little bit ironic given the drive that we're discussing right now, because Dare Gumbawale was a hero in that Tampa
in that
Bay
game.
Victory.
Yeah, in that game. Yeah, here's what it sounded like. Dare Gumbawale, they lost Kymie Fairbairn to a hamstring injury, and this is what it sounded like. Dare Gumbawale had to come on and kick a field goal in this game in the second half. It was a big field goal.
Oh, they're going to try a field goal. Here we go with some dramatic stuff here for Frank Ross's special teams unit. Ogunbowale will try it. A 29-yard attempt from the left hash mark. Weeks will snap. Cameron Johnston will hold Ogunbowale, the running back, for the lead. Snap is down. The kick is up. And it's good! Dare Ogunbowale for three. And the Texans are back in front. Are you kidding?
That was wild. I mean, that was Vandy level. That was like buzzer beater field goal animation level from Vandy right there.
Yeah.
That was a great call.
That was, it's such a unique situation too. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not what, that's not what you dial up on what you expect to see happen in a game.
No, I think it's like 20% of the reason Dare makes the team every year is like, hey man, mm-hmm. you never know when your kicker is going to pull a hammy. You got to have an emergency kicker. Dare's the guy.
Nick's definitely done some kind of spreadsheet on that.
Trying
to figure out exactly what the value of a backup kicker is.
A backup emergency kicker.
Multiple roles.
Who can also play special teams and third down back. Yes.
Yeah.
Especially at the salary he's getting. He's like a 1 year, $2 million guy. Like he's close to a minimum level, minimum salary guy.
There might be some part of Nick where, like, he's done some spreadsheet where he realizes, like, gosh, you know what? Most teams actually should have a backup kicker, but I don't want to be the one that does it. So
Dare's the guy.
But Dare suits that, fits that role.
Yep. This was the touchdown I talked about. We're reliving that magical game between the Buccaneers and the Texans from 2023. This was the Bucs taking the lead. Late in the game, Baker Mayfield to Cade Otton.
No timeouts for the Bucs. Texans up three. First down, Buccaneers at the Houston 14. Empty backfield. Here's the snap to Baker. Baker throwing to the end zone, and it's caught, and touchdown, Otton. The Bucs go in front. 46 seconds to go.
All right, 46 seconds to go. So they take the lead, kick the extra point, which was big because that put them up four. So now the Texans have to go get a touchdown. In 46 seconds, there's a pass to Dalton Schultz. There's a pass to Noah Brown. There's the pass to Tank Dell that really put home. There was 15 seconds left, maybe, something like that. CJ, they're about the 40-yard line. He drops it in the bucket to Tank in between the two defensive backs right along the sideline to put them at the 15-yard line. And then with 6 seconds left, bam.
10 seconds to go. CJ gets the snap. CJ looking, throwing to the end zone. Got that.
Yes! Yes!
The lead.
Yes!
And Dell with the reception. Rock and roll. My goodness. There are flags on the field. Could be on the defense. What a comeback.
Go Cougs.
Let's go. Here's the call from Land Clark. Bring us some good news.
After the play, unsportsmanlike conduct. Defense number 54. A 15-yard penalty will be enforced on the kickoff.
Yes! Houston gets it done! Are you kidding?
And then the next week, CJ would have some late heroics to beat the Bengals in Cincinnati, and that was a Bengals team that had Joe Burrow. Remember they picked off Joe Burrow a couple times in that game? That was, I remember my take coming in Monday after that game, Seth, was after the game we just listened to, the final 39-37, the Texans win, was that the Texans have a quarterback that you, if you're the other team, you've got to manage the clock all the way to the very end. Otherwise, if you give him any time, he's gonna get you.
Right.
You know,
right.
And he got the Bengals the next week, too. Like, it happened 2 weeks in a row. And I guess the I don't know, disturbing, sad, depressing, I don't know what it is. I feel like that, other than the two playoff games, regular season C.J. Stroud, I feel like that's been the peak so far, was those two games. That Tampa game with the comeback, that Bengals game on the road with the comeback. I can't think of a game that C.J.'s had since then. Not that he's been bad. He's been very good, obviously. He made a Pro Bowl his rookie year, and he wasn't bad last year. He just wasn't as good as he was his rookie year. But that felt like, in terms of like CJ fever, you know, like everybody having CJ fever, like that was the like the league having it. Like, he was the story for about a 2 or 3 week period.
It's where the Slowick fever, or at least elevated temperature, began.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You know, look at this guy doing this thing with this rookie quarterback.
Bingo.
So yeah. In hindsight, I'd rather have a slower buildup and steady burn than the incredible debut and then whatever the hell last year was.
Oh yeah, yeah. No. Yeah.
The one thing from that game, I was looking over Jonathan Alexander's notes from after the game, and the two big takeaways that I think are still relevant was that the Texans started off in that game. In the first half, they had 7 yards on 7 carries on the ground, finished with 53 yards rushing as a team. So in establishing the run, that was the first hints of, all right, let's make this a complete and total effort here. I think the Texans last week were better in the run game than, you know, 7 carries for 7 yards in the first half. But a lot of it didn't click until later in the game with Joe Mixon on that final, or excuse me, with Nick Chubb on that final drive.
Yeah.
And then the other one was just simply that, like, Baker Mayfield, like, I think going into that year, Baker Mayfield was a little bit of an afterthought in a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, that was
and
his first year with the Bucs. Yeah.
It's changed a lot for Baker Mayfield. I mean, one of his touchdown throws in that Atlanta game was just beautiful. It was, he threaded it between two defenders, just a line drive, and it was a very, very high level throw. So you're not this. You face Matt Stafford, who supposedly had a back injury last week. Baker Mayfield is healthy and still a very, very good quarterback. Whatever your thoughts were about Baker Mayfield at any given point, you have to acknowledge he's playing a very good caliber of football.
Yeah, no question. It's funny, with Baker, people talk about in Cleveland, like, man, Cleveland must feel like that was the one that got away. You know, they literally decided we're going to go with Deshaun Watson instead of Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield was the quarterback for 14 games the season before Deshaun got there. I wonder, too, about Carolina. You know, like, he goes to Carolina that year that the Browns went and traded for Deshaun. And Carolina has been just as bad at quarterback as a team as Cleveland's been. I mean, they've been worse. Cleveland at least made the playoffs with Joe Flacco a couple of years ago. Carolina has been trash since then. I wonder if Carolina ever thinks about that. Like, man, we had Baker Mayfield. We had this guy, and he's in their division now, too. We had this guy in the building, and we sent him off to the Rams. We cut him and sent him off to the Rams to go rehab there.
It's just, we'd have to just go find an article, but as of late in the last few years, everything has swung more and more towards, do I kind of take a guy in the top five of quarterbacks who I don't feel awesome about versus do I try a reclamation project with a veteran NFL quarterback? And the veteran NFL quarterback, the reclamation project feels like just as good or just as bad of a risk as taking a quarterback high.
Okay, well, let's stick with that because I wanted to hit that because this was a big weekend this past week. If we're going to overreact to week one, reclamation quarterbacks owned the weekend last week. Okay, so which of these guys are real and which of these guys are phony when it comes to these reclamation jobs? We'll do that coming up next.
It's Boomer and Geo, mornings on The Fan, 101.9 FM.
My job is to try to get us to a championship. That's all I care about. Because remember, when they fired Tibbs, what they said in their PR statement that they put out, and that was, we're all about championships, and I'm paraphrasing. We want to win a championship, and the reason we essentially fire the coach is we don't think he can get us there.
Listen to Boomer and Geo on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.